Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Broadband Exchange, the podcast from your friends at Telecompetitor. I'm Ian Desher, Pivot's Director of Media and Story and Managing Editor of Telecompetitor. It's time to review this week's broadband news. Let's get into it. We'll start this week with broadband policy, where a court decision cleared the way for federal Digital Equity Act programs to move forward. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit lifted an injunction that had prevented the NTIA from distributing funding through the Digital Equity Capacity Grant Program and the Digital Equity Competitive Grant Program. The injunction had followed a challenge arguing that the program's focus on covered populations violated constitutional equal protection requirements. The court's latest decision allows the NTIA to resume the programs. The Digital Equity Act, part of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, provided $2.75 billion for efforts designed to help people adopt broadband and use it effectively, including things like digital skills, devices, technical support, and overcoming other barriers. Digital equity was also at the center of a new Oklahoma initiative in the news last week. The Oklahoma Broadband Office announced a $14.5 million program that will turn as many as 175 libraries into what the state calls community access portals. Those portals will give residents places to participate in virtual primary care appointments and telehealth consultations, complete job interviews, access workforce development services, and build digital skills. More than 75 rural libraries and regional library systems expressed interest during the state's initial survey. Oklahoma's initiative is being funded through the American Rescue Plan Act's Capital Projects Fund, and it's interesting because it's treating libraries not simply as locations with public Wi-Fi, but as infrastructure for healthcare, employment, education, and other essential services. Indiana also announced another round of state broadband funding last week. The 17th round of the Indiana Connectivity Program awarded approximately $250,000 to 8 providers. The projects will connect 62 locations that lacked access to qualifying broadband service. Surf Internet received the largest award at $76,800, followed by PSC Fiber at $57,600. Other recipients included Auburn Essential Services, Decatur County REMC, Giddingsville Telephone Company, Johnson County REMC, Joink, Main Street Fiber, and Mulberry Telecommunications. Since the Indiana Connectivity Program began, Indiana has awarded more than $14 million to connect over 3,600 homes, businesses, and community anchor institutions. The Indiana Connectivity Program uses a demand-driven approach. Residents and businesses that lack adequate service can enter their information into the state's connectivity portal, and providers can then bid to extend service to those locations. That makes each round highly targeted, sometimes reaching only a handful of locations through an individual award. Next, the FCC is preparing to vote on changes to the broadband consumer labels that providers are required to use. The Commission's July 22nd open meeting agenda includes 5 proposed modifications intended to make the labels easier for consumers to use. The changes are part of FCC Chairman Brendan Carr's attempt to remove certain requirements he believes are onerous for providers. The changes would clarify how providers display monthly prices, introductory rates, and additional charges. They also would address situations involving multiple service plans and revise some of the requirements for displaying labels online. Providers have already invested considerable time adapting their sales processes and websites to the rules, as I'm sure you know. Even changes intended to simplify the labels will likely create new work, particularly for smaller providers managing multiple technologies and service tiers. I'd be remiss if I didn't say that Pivot, Telecompetitor's parent company, is happy to help you out with your broadband labels if you're in that position. Now let's move to a merger involving 2 companies that many rural broadband providers know well. National Information Solutions Cooperative, or NISC, and Meridian Cooperative announced plans to merge. Both organizations are member-owned technology cooperatives serving utilities and broadband providers. Their platforms support functions like billing, accounting, customer care, operations, engineering, and network management. The company said the combination will create a larger cooperative with greater resources for product development and member support. The merged organization will serve more than 1,500 members across the United States and Canada. The transaction remains subject to approval from the memberships of both cooperatives, along with other closing requirements. Turning to network technology, the NTIA opened applications for as much as $53 million to accelerate AI-native radio access networks. The funding opportunity, called Solutions for AI Native RAN, is the fourth funding round from the Public Wireless Supply Chain Innovation Fund. Applications open July 14th and will close September 9th, with awards expected on a rolling basis during the fall. NTIA said the money will support the development, testing, and commercialization of American-led RAN technology that incorporates artificial intelligence. The broader goals include encouraging open and interoperable wireless equipment and creating trusted AI technology that can be deployed domestically and exported to other markets. That story connected to last week's discussion of whether today's 5G networks are prepared to study AI applications, and the answer from that report was essentially not quite. So in light of that, last week's NTIA announcement looks further ahead toward networks built with AI as part of the architecture rather than added later as another workload. In other news, AT&T and Ericsson partnered together to demonstrate how advanced wireless networks can provide sensing capabilities that go beyond carrying calls and data. The companies used 5G equipment to detect, locate, and track multiple drones flying between 300 and 400 feet near AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas. The system generated real-time information about each drone's location, speed, and elevation. Ericsson used radios, signal processing, and AI-enabled sensing algorithms to follow the drones through their flight paths. The company said the technology could eventually help protect stadiums, critical infrastructure, and other sensitive locations. Integrated sensing and communication is often discussed as a future 6G capability, but part of what AT&T and Ericsson were doing here is showing in this test that operators can begin exploring those functions with advanced 5G infrastructure that's available today. AI also showed up in a J.D. Power study of business internet satisfaction. Overall, business internet satisfaction increased slightly in 2026, rising 2 points to 709 on a 1,000-point scale. Small and medium-sized businesses reported this improved satisfaction. Large businesses, though, went in the opposite direction. Their performance and reliability scores fell by 12 points as AI applications, cloud services, video collaboration, and other real-time tools placed heavier demands on business networks. J.D. Power said the findings showed that enterprises increasingly judge reliability by more than basic uptime. A network can technically remain available while still delivering latency, congestion, or performance problems that interfere with demanding applications. That is going to matter more as AI becomes part of ordinary business operations. Providers serving large organizations may need to offer more proactive network management rather than simply promising that the connection will remain on. A separate report found that expertise rather than cellular coverage is the leading obstacle delaying Internet of Things deployments. 60% of respondents said a lack of internet or external expertise caused IoT projects to be delayed or blocked. Budget constraints followed at 49%, while connectivity problems were cited by 43%. When companies tried to expand deployments beyond their core operating areas, management complexity became an even larger issue. 65% named managing deployments outside the core coverage area as their biggest scaling challenge, compared with 41% who cited coverage limitations themselves. In middle mile news, Tara and GSMA Intelligence introduced a calculator designed to help providers compare transport technologies and long-term costs. The tool lets operators model different deployment environments and evaluate technologies based on factors such as cost per bit, distance, capacity, and expected traffic. The options can include fiber, microwave systems, satellite connectivity, and free space optical technology, like, of course, Tara's own Lightbridge. The analysis behind the tool found no single solution that works best in every environment. Fiber offers tremendous capacity and longevity, of course, but sometimes can be expensive or slow to build. Microwave can be deployed more quickly, but can run into capacity limits. Other technologies can fill specific geographic or economic gaps. For rural providers, that makes the calculator potentially useful as a planning tool, especially where difficult terrain, permitting complications, or long construction timelines make middle-mile routes more complex. And speaking of the middle mile, in Virginia, a new middle-mile provider cleared a regulatory hurdle for the first stage of a planned six-phase network. The Virginia State Corporation Commission approved Virginia Fiber Express Network's application to operate as a CLEC. The company's first route will run from Ashburn to Richmond, generally following the I-95 corridor. Future phases are expected to extend the network into other parts of Virginia and neighboring states. The company plans to offer dark fiber and wavelength services with an emphasis on route diversity and resiliency for hyperscale data centers, AI facilities, carriers, and other high-capacity customers. Finally, two reports examine the increasingly competitive residential broadband market. A Moffitt-Nathanson analysis estimated that Starlink could eventually make service available to between 24 and 35% of U.S. households, or approximately 35 million to 50 million homes. The provider's key constraint will likely be not the number of satellites, but the capacity available within each satellite spot beam, which limits how many customers Starlink can support in areas with greater household density. The company's current V2 mini satellite constellation is best suited to highly rural areas, but Starlink's planned V3 satellites are intended to provide significantly more capacity and could expand the practical addressable market, though the transition is expected to take several years. The analysis projected that Starlink's U.S. broadband market share could rise from 3.9% at the end of 2026 to 7.4% by the end of 2031. Its strongest position would remain in rural areas where wired competition is limited or non-existent. Large cable companies, meanwhile, collectively lost broadband subscribers during the first quarter of 2026, according to a separate report, but the losses were smaller than what they had been 1 year earlier. Cable operators are responding to market conditions with new pricing structures, mobile bundles, network upgrades, and efforts to improve customer retention. The first quarter results suggest that those strategies may be slowing the losses, but they have not yet returned the sector to meaningful broadband subscriber growth. In other words, though cable's situation may be improving, losing fewer customers isn't exactly cause to celebrate. Thank you for listening to the Broadband Exchange. You can read all the articles we mentioned today at telecompetitor.com. Feel free to drop us a line while you're there. Thank you again for joining us, and we'll see you next time.